It's midday. I'm Mike Mulcahy, sitting in for Gary Eichten. When was the last time you heard as much about a gathering of scientists in the Twin Cities as you have about this week's conference on animal genetics? Most of the stories in the news have been about the expected protests and police preparations for them. We thought we would spend the next hour of midday trying to find out more about what the people at the conference will actually be talking about. We'll be talking to Larry Shook, the director of the Food Animal Biotechnology Center at the University of Minnesota. He helped organize the conference. But first, we wanted to get some background from Minnesota Public Radio reporter Mary Lozier.
Midwest farmers have planted genetically altered crops since the late 1990s. Crops like BT corn and Roundup Ready soybeans are bioengineered to contain a gene from another species. These so-called transgenic crops now make up one-third of the corn and half of the soybean acreage in the Midwest. Now, transgenic livestock are on the horizon. Already, scientists are developing goats, sheep, and dairy cows with transplanted genes for use in laboratories. Those animals are producing human pharmaceuticals in their milk, although the products have not yet been approved for commercial use. In theory, scientists could use the same technology to create genetically modified dairy cows for widespread commercial use by the nation's farmers. That could mean disease-resistant dairy cows, for example. But Chuck Muskoplatt, dean of the College of Agriculture, Food, and Environmental Sciences at the University of Minnesota, says huge obstacles stand in the way.
It's very, very expensive. It's almost not feasible except for the most valuable of all human pharmaceuticals. And that may happen within the decade to have very, very specialized pharmaceutical-producing animals. But I don't think it's likely to be routine production of milk or dairy or meat products within the next decade. I think that's a much longer-term time horizon.
For one thing, genetically engineered animals are much more difficult to propagate than plants. In general, embryonic cells injected with the desired gene must be cloned and raised in surrogate mothers. The failure rate of cloning is spectacularly high. It takes 100 attempts to produce just two or three live offspring. Muskoplatt says current technology just isn't up to the task of producing genetically engineered animals on a large scale. More importantly, he says, the public still needs to deal with the troubling social and ethical questions raised by the new technology.
I think these things find their way into society when the society becomes to understand them and realize that the benefits outweigh the risk. And it's my opinion, at least in the chair that I sit in as the dean of a college of agriculture, that the community is not yet ready for genetically modified animals on any large scale.
But others seem undaunted by the obstacles. Michael Bishop is president of Infigen Incorporated, a biotechnology company in DeForest, Wisconsin. The company owns the technology that led to the birth of Gene, the world's first cloned cow, in 1997. Gene now lives in the Minnesota Zoo. Infigen has a herd of nearly 100 cloned animals. Bishop says transgenic farm animals for widespread use are only a few years away.
I think we're very close. All we lack is the genes that we want to put into the cells to do it right now. Because we could create the founder animals carrying the gene, for instance, a bull, and use that bull to breed literally thousands and thousands of cows.
Bishop says he expects the necessary genes will be identified within the next few years. But even if the company solves the technical obstacles to transgenic farm animals, Bishop acknowledges the public may not be ready for them.
That may take a few years. We may need to do more research to prove to the public that we're good stewards of technology and that the technology does not harm the animals and the products from the animals do not harm people.
The public may still have a few years to get used to the idea of transgenic farm animals, but transgenic fish are much closer to supermarket shelves. Fish are easier to genetically manipulate than mammals because fish produce massive numbers of eggs that can quickly be raised in water. A Massachusetts-based company called AF Protein is raising test pens of genetically altered salmon on Prince Edward Island in Canada. The salmon contain a gene from a cold water fish known as an eel pout. They grow 4 to 6 times faster than standard salmon. Company president Elliot Entis hopes to have the genetically altered salmon ready for sale to commercial fish farmers in 2 years. He says they will be clearly labeled to show their origin.
We're very sensitive to the fact that consumers need to be made aware of what the product is. We've got nothing to hide.
Entis says the main objections have come from environmentalists, concerned that the transgenic fish could escape from fish farms and mate with wild fish. His company plans to address those concerns by sterilizing its genetically modified salmon. It's now seeking approval for its product from the Federal Food and Drug Administration. I'm Mary Lozier, Minnesota Public Radio.
We're talking about animal genetics during this hour of midday. Our guest is Larry Shook, professor of veterinary pathobiology at the University of Minnesota. He helped organize the conference of the International Society of Animal Genetics here in the Twin Cities. We invite you to join our conversation. The number to call in the Twin Cities is 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Anywhere else you can hear us, give us a call toll-free, 1-800-242-2828, 800-242-2828. Professor Shook, thanks for being with us this afternoon.
My pleasure.
Can you tell us a little bit specifically, but in plain English, so that even a radio person might understand it, what exactly are folks going to be talking about at the conference?
Sure. And let me apologize. I was cut off. I wasn't able to hear some of the introductory comments. So if you want to ask me questions regarding that, you have to give me a little bit of background.
Okay.
But the society is, you know, has been, this is the 27th meeting, and it really represents scientists from all over the world. And in fact, I was just looking this morning, we have 48 countries from all over the world represented here with about 650 scientists. And the society is really has a history of utilizing animal genetics and to study processes and diseases in animals. And also uses this meeting as an idea, as a focal point for sharing ideas and exchanging information between different countries. And I want to make stress a point here that this is a society and it's not a corporation. This isn't the motivation of this group is driven by increasing food production in poorer countries, and that'll be one of the focus points of one of the workshops supported by the United Nations Food Agricultural Organization of how we can protect indigenous populations in poorer countries. Another area has been how we can begin to alleviate genetic diseases in companion animals such as horses and dogs. And then the third area is how we can begin to increase food production and animals that are used throughout the world.
And is the primary means of doing these things that folks are talking about genetic modification, gene splicing?
Absolutely not. In fact, looking at the abstracts out of the, we have, as I say, 650 people participating. There's really, there's one invited speaker, Dr. Roble, who's been involved in animal cloning, that will come and share some of their recent results. But as of people in the society, we actually have I think only one abstract that will be that addresses transgenics or genetic engineering.
And so, what are the other means of accomplishing some of these goals?
Well, this is a pretty traditional society, and really looks at using traditional means. I think there's if I could just spend a minute here, and I think there's some confusion with the idea of using animal genetics. The domestication of animals and traditional animal breeding has been going on since we've become a civilized world. And what we're talking about now is having a better understanding of how we can select animals for different kinds of purposes, whether they be a companion animal, such as I say, with dogs or horses, or animals that are used for work or as a source of food. What we're trying to do is understand how we can do that better. And that may, and I want to stress that we're not hiding, that may involve genetic manipulation, but that's certainly only one of a multiple number of activities that the society is involved in.
And so this general broad area of animal genetics, is it fair to say that most of that is sort of the traditional crossbreeding?
It is.
Because certainly to hear some people characterize what you folks are doing over there is to think that you're all plotting up ways to come up with little Franken critters who...
Absolutely. And I think there's another issue here that I want to make sure we have a chance to discuss. And that is this, there's discussion or some of our demonstrators of circulated information saying that, you know, that's clandestine. We have things to hide. And the society also has a very strong statement that any of the results, you know, that are published in the society's journal has to have a statement that any use of the animals has been only done through a protocol that has been approved by their, you know, their universities or their governments. So there's none of this secret clandestine type of research that's going on, to, as you say, to make Frankenstein type animals. This is all open. The society is a very open society.
We're talking with Larry Shook. He is a professor of veterinary pathobiology at the University of Minnesota. He also directs the Food Animal Biotechnology Center at the university. We're talking about the International Society of Animal Genetics Conference, which actually begins today in Minneapolis, continues through Wednesday. There's been a lot of talk about this conference in the news. A lot of the attention is focused on the expected protests from people who are opposed to genetic engineering and other uses of animals. We wanted to take this opportunity to talk with Professor Shook about what's actually happening inside the conference, and we welcome your questions and comments as well. The number to join us, if you're listening in the Twin Cities, is 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Anywhere else you can hear us, give us a toll-free call, 1-800-242-2828. That's 800-242-2828. And Flo is on the line with us from Rochester. Flo, go ahead.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, good morning.
I'm sorry, good morning. Yes, I think the history of science has showed us that there have been experiments that were so-called scientifically sweet that scientists were just curious about and were rather interested in playing around with that turned out to be very detrimental. And if I'm not mistaken, Einstein was one of those people that looked with great chagrin at some of the uses that his works were put to. I would say that this methodology is highly questionable, and just because it's approved by so-and-so and so-and-so does not mean that it's correct or that it should be done in the first place. And I think that one should think long and hard and make sure before you go ahead with these projects that the outcomes are going to be what you want the outcomes to be. The spurious conception that we need this to feed the world, I think if we used our resources better, we could feed the world much better than we do right now. So I think this is highly questionable, and I would definitely have a negative opinion about it.
Okay, thanks for the call, Flo. I think that... Flo was talking about the genetic engineering, Professor Shook. Has the science sort of leapt ahead of society, what society thinks is acceptable, and are people in your line of work doing things without a full understanding of what the consequences might be?
Well, I think we all want to make sure that we're doing the right thing, and I think she brought up some very good points of making sure society that the science and the technology is supporting the needs and the goals of society.
Mm-hmm.
With that said, I feel very comfortable that the research here is meeting the goals of society. And I think that isn't to say that we don't need to have broader discussions, and I that's why I appreciate having a chance to participate in this program, because it is clear that, you know, as technology imposes itself on all of our lives, and not just in animal research, but in many ways in terms of privacy and security, these are the kinds of broader dialogues that we do need to have. And I think here at the University of Minnesota we've had a number of occasions, and I know the university is very welcome to having public discussions about what we should be doing. And I think that's absolutely right, and Flo brought up some good point. We should be looking at that. With that said, I think that the idea that what we're doing is wrong is almost by definition that she's already decided what we're doing without having any idea what's going on. I know here at the university, as I said, you know, the majority of our work is funded by, you know, the government, and the government is looking at this from a number of public perspectives, and I've been involved as a grant manager for the USDA, and I know that we've had many public forums across the country to have these discussions. We should continue to have them. And science that's not serving society's needs, it should be reviewed. But I feel very comfortable that that is being done. Obviously, there are times when there's not always unanimity in terms of everyone in agreement. But I think that the idea of having open public dialogue and forums is happening and will continue to happen.
Are you surprised by the amount of attention that's been drawn to this conference and maybe the expectation of these protests that may or may not materialize?
Well, in one way, I'm not surprised at the attention, because I think what we have here is a group of the best scientists in the world. So I'm hoping that we can have, you know, we wanted to have attention. We wanted to have this meeting. We're hosting this meeting here in Minneapolis as part of the university's programs and genetics, and it's part of our, you know, our strategic plan here at the university to use new tools to address these problems in the world. And we have a great program here, and we're very honored to have been selected to host this meeting. I think in one case, and maybe this is an important thing, that this meeting does serve to stimulate the public discussions that as Flo alluded to, that maybe should be brought to a broader attention, and we welcome having that discussion, because, as I said earlier, we're very proud of the work we do, and we think it serves a very important role and purpose for serving society.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Chris is standing by from Golden Valley. Chris, welcome to Midday.
Thank you. I should preface this by saying that I'm a social friend of Larry's, although I don't know anything about his work. I feel the opponents of this conference are a little bit like the Catholic Church that excommunicated Galileo because he discovered that the Earth rotates around the sun, and suddenly humans were not at the center of the universe. You know, the more we learn about our genetic makeup and that of other animals, the more we're discovering how much alike all life is. And I find it a very humbling I find this research very humbling. I don't see it at all as humans trying to dominate other species. We're discovering that we're incredibly alike other species. And I think that's something we really need to add into the equation as we get into public policy discussions. The other thing is that, you know, what this conference is about is science, and how we use science in the everyday world is a public policy matter that we do need to discuss, but that doesn't mean we should stop researching in these areas. And, you know, we have choices that we can make. I choose to eat organic food, but, you know, that's my choice, and I think that we need to, my final comment is I just think we need to have the diversity out there for people to have both discussions and then make choices in their personal lives. And that's my comment. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Chris. Let's just go on to another caller. Don is on the line from Minneapolis. Don, welcome to Midday.
Hello.
Hello.
I'd like to first compliment your staff that I talked to when I called in. I'm very pleased with your show and your show in general, and the interaction I had with your staff when I called.
Okay. Well, go ahead with your question or comment.
My comment had to do with the term genetic manipulation. Some time ago, which is literally thousands of years ago, humanity domesticated wolves. And every dog that anybody has now, in my understanding, is an actual offspring of a wolf. If you go back far enough in ancestries and you look at the diversity of dogs we have, you know, my understanding of studies into genetics is just to do something like that and to actually understand that on a greater scale. And to mesh with the caller previously, every time a new technology comes along, almost without exception, there is some opposition to it, whether it's a small amount or a large amount. There's always some reluctance to implement new technology. And yet, often new technology is just a variation of something we've been doing possibly for thousands of years. And I'll take any response offline, and thank you.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you, Don.
Professor Shook, isn't the question is, yes, this happens over thousands and thousands and thousands of years, we assume, but some of these stories you read about, taking the genetic material from one species and putting it into another species, that seems like something that can happen almost overnight.
Well, that was the point I was going to bring up from listening to Don's comments. And I think two issues here, and I think I touched on it, and he reiterated that, is that technology affects all of us in different ways. And so there's how technology addresses our personal lives is I think one of the issues that's highlighted here in terms of when we bring animals into the picture. The second part, which I think you're alluding to, is the speed at which technology now is having an impact on our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a comfort zone that is also very unique to people. And I think the speed at which things can happen, and that was your what you were bringing up, really, I think, is important in terms of having in that debate, which Chris talked about, is how fast public policy can meet the change that's happening because of technology. And I don't think it's unique to animal research. It's the same issues, as I mentioned, that they come up to us when we talk about everyone using the Internet and all of a sudden realizing that it has an impact on our personal privacy.
Mm-hmm.
Because people can follow what we do. And all of a sudden we realize this technology has much greater ramifications than we actually think.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get back to the science part, though. The science part here is for us as scientists and as a researcher, is freedom for me and my professional job is to discover things. And I think Chris made a very good point of science separation from public policy. What's happening in some of the demonstrations and an earlier call by Flo was saying, I can find examples where I don't like the idea of the outcome of the research, so therefore research is bad. And, you know, we can use examples of drugs. I mean, people who are suffering from very severe disease that have incredible pain thresholds take drugs to control their lives. And that's a positive thing. We also have drugs that can be used to destroy our lives because they're used inappropriately. And so the use of drugs or technology are not necessarily good or necessarily bad. And I think we have to look at how they're being used. And that's a public policy decision. But I think getting back to the point here is the research that's being shared here today is being done in an open forum. It's being shared by between scientists from all over the world, rich or poor nations, which I think is to me a real positive aspect of this society, that poorer nations are having access to technology and genetic information that's being supported by rich nations.
Larry Shook is our guest. He is one of the organizers of the Conference of the International Society of Animal Genetics, which gets underway today in Minneapolis. We'd like to have you join our conversation. The number to call in the Twin Cities, area code 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000. Anywhere else you can hear us, you want to call us toll-free, that's fine. 1-800-242-2828. 1-800-242-2828. We'll go back to the phones in just a minute, but first a short break. And Patty Marsicano is standing by with the news. Patty?
Thanks, Mike. Good afternoon. The United States is trying to get the Palestinians to accept a plan that would place the Arab neighborhoods of Jerusalem under Palestinian control. Diplomatic sources say Israel's prime minister has approved the plan, which is being pushed at the Camp David summit. Last night, Yasser Arafat and Ehud Barak met for the first time in a week. The Palestinian and Israeli leaders dined together with Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. President Clinton and other leaders of wealthy nations have been hearing calls today to help the world's poorest countries get out from under their debt burdens. It's been a topic of discussion at the gathering of G8 leaders in Okinawa. Also taking center stage is the proposed U.S. missile defense system. President Clinton and Russian leader Vladimir Putin failed to make progress on their dispute over the system when they met today in Okinawa. War crimes judges have affirmed a 10-year prison sentence against a Bosnian Croat paramilitary commander who was convicted convicted of rape and torture, the commander was tried for failing to stop the sexual assault by one of his soldiers. The appellate court at the International War Crimes Tribunal on the former Yugoslavia reinforces the original judgment, which broadened the definition of rape as a war crime. In regional news, the executive director of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department says Minneapolis police pulled his car over this week in an incident he thinks was racially motivated. Ken White, an African American, says two undercover narcotics officers pulled him over and made him step out and put his hands on the car. They asked him what he had been doing in the nearby park and whose car he was driving. White says he identified himself as the city's civil rights director, but says the officers still showed no respect. The third stage of resurfacing on Interstate 94 between Minneapolis and St. Paul begins tonight. Eastbound I-94 between Cedar Avenue and Highway 280 will be closed from 8 o'clock tonight until 5:30 Monday morning. The state weather forecast for today, mostly cloudy in the northeast, partly cloudy in the south and west. The highs from the upper 60s to the mid-70s. In the Twin Cities, it's 72. And Mike, that's the latest from the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.
Thanks, Patty. We're talking to Larry Shook, University of Minnesota professor, about the International Conference on Animal Genetics going on in the Twin Cities. And let's go right back to the phones. Ruth is on the line from Virginia. Ruth, go ahead, please.
I think basic research is wonderful, but it's funded by someone. I mean, you can say it's funded by the university, but where did their funding come from? I think if we look far enough back, we'll find it's corporations, and they are busy patenting genes right now to make lots of money. So where does the money come from? Thank you.
Thank you, Ruth. What about that, Professor Shook?
Well, I think Ruth touched on a few points. I mean, this I get back to the society. This we have 48 countries here, and I can speak on behalf of the science here in the United States and certainly here at the University of Minnesota, where in animal genetics, the majority of our work has been funded either by the state through legislative support or from the United States Department of Agriculture, the competitive grants. I'm not aware of any corporate support here at the university that's supporting genetic engineering for animals. I'm not saying it isn't there, but I'm not aware of that for in farm animals. The corporation, and we look globally, in some of our member countries, you have to be cognizant of the fact that, in China or in New Zealand, the associations are the government, are the people, and they're certainly very aggressive in funding the animal research. New Zealand, I'll use for an example, the New Zealand Dairy Board, which is a cooperative of the producers, the dairy farmers in the state there, are provide tremendous support for research that's done by the basic scientists at the government and universities. So it's a mix. There's a lot of, particularly in animal genetics right now, I would have to say that it's my opinion that it's majority is funded by the government, very little by corporations.
Well,
and that is in contrast, I should add, and it is in contrast to what we've seen with some of the plant research.
Okay. Well, let me ask you sort of a follow-up question then. What is then the goal of the research? Is it purely to find new products that can be more profitable for somebody, or is it to help human beings, or is it to help the animals themselves?
Well, hopefully it's a little bit of everything. I mean, this idea that corporate profits are and we'll use Minnesota as an example. Corporate profits can be the family farmer that are using genetically improved dairy cattle for increased milk production. And we have a very strong program here that's been historically with the university of our researchers in animal science providing support to increase output of milk in herds through genetics. Traditional breeding, but also now we have genetic markers that we can use to enhance and increase the rate at which we can make genetic gain. Now, there's another issue here about patenting that seems to be a dirty word in some of these discussions. And I want to make sure it's clear that whether the government or a corporation is supporting work, the university does try to patent information that to protect that information. That isn't for corporate profits. That's to use it to protect it so it can be used to support for research and as part of our outreach here at the university.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. Mary is standing by in Minneapolis. Mary?
Hi, yeah. I've got a couple of comments, and then I have one question regarding the conference presentations. My opinion is that the moral evolution, as moral evolution is moving towards the recognition of human kinship with other species, but that technological advances, because they are driven by profit and curiosity, are always moving toward objectifying and exploiting other species. Unless science is guided by intelligence and compassion, as well as, you know, that to counteract those, you know, less than ethical motives, it's going to stunt the moral evolution of our society. And one comment regarding, you had made one brief reference to the protocols always being supervised by animal care committees at institutions, and I'd like to point out for instance, at the University of Minnesota, no proposal has ever been rejected on the basis of something being too cruel. That has simply never happened. And now I'll go on to my question. I'd like to know how many of the conference presentations are dealing with the ethics, and if you have representation from a broad spectrum of perspectives. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mary. If I can come back to the point about here at the university and rejection of animal protocols, I'm not on that committee, and I suspect her information is correct, but I'd like to add a second comment to that. I mean, the idea of the rejection of the protocols is that someone puts a protocol in, and if there are objections to it, it's modified and continues. So the committee continues to work with the researchers till there is agreement on the protocol. So it's not like protocols haven't been modified. And I think that's the dialogue and the interactions between the protocol, the researcher, and the committee is saying, you know, this doesn't seem right. Let's work together to come up with a protocol that would be acceptable. So I think that it's not surprising then that we have a very strong interaction between the committee and the researcher so that we can come to common ground so that we have protocols that are acceptable to both parties, which I think is where you come to that none have been rejected, but we've found common ground for all of our proposals.
And what about her question about ethical presentations?
And I was going to come to that. The ethical, we have a number of workshops where the ethical issues are being raised. In fact, one that's has been supported by the, as I say, the United Nations Food Agricultural Organization to look at how we can make sure that the technologies are being used to in the betterment of preserving animals in different countries. So I think the society has a very strong interest in the ethical issues. And I think the ethical issues here are much broader than the perspective of a single individual. And I keep coming back to the theme. With 48 countries being represented here, there's a very, very diverse thinking and perspective that is openly shared, and those issues are on the floor. We have a very active business meeting where people have historically made very significant comments about the ethical issues of our research.
We're talking with Larry Shook from the University of Minnesota. He's one of the organizers of the Society of Animal Genetics Conference, which is starting today. You can join our conversation. The number in the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Anywhere else, it's a toll-free call, 1-800-242-2828. And Jean is calling in from Rochester this afternoon. Jean?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
One of the colors that seems to be a consistent emphasis with them is that corporations are doing this to make money. Well, isn't that what business is supposed to be doing, is being responsible to their employees and being profitable? And you also need money to go on and do research. You have no idea how much research is going to cost. There's a lot of talk about the animal genetics and biotechnology, and if people really sat down and looked at what percentage of research is into any of the cross species or the biotech or that, it's such a small amount because the cost is so high that these companies just aren't willy-nilly sitting around saying, hey, let's, you know, try to cross this. I mean, there's a huge expense in this, huge risks, and of course they're going to make money. I mean, they're responsible to their shareholders, they're responsible to their employees to be a profitable company, so I don't understand why everybody always thinks it's bad that corporations are trying to be profitable and make money. I mean, they're not charities. If they weren't supposed to be making money, they'd set themselves up as a charity.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Gene, thanks for the comment.
Thank you, Gene.
I guess, you know, certainly nobody has anything against corporations making money, but when you read an article, and this may be far afield, Professor Shook, but there's an article about some genetically modified fish that some folks are working on, and the fish are supposedly, these new genes make the fish grow faster, but they die younger, and one of the concerns that's been brought up is if some of those fish were to escape from the fish farm and breed with a school of quote-unquote normal fish, eventually that gene would be passed along, and pretty soon all the fish would die early and the fish would die out. I mean, there's making a profit in the short term, and there's a profit in the long term, I guess.
Right, but if I could come back to the issue, I don't want to avoid your comment about the fish, mm-hmm. But I want to start at the beginning when you talk about corporate profits and about the corporate development of genetically modified animals. The issue here, and particularly one that I think is where the society fits into there, is, you know, a lot of the corporate profits that we're talking about is based on the technology and developing something that has value to people. The reason companies are making money on something is because people are buying their products. And in this society has been very active in terms of genetics, I think, in very poor countries. And so I feel very proud that this society has worked in areas where corporations actually have not entered, because there is not enough, if you will, market share there for them to put in the investment, as Gene had said, to come up with new crosses and new strains of crops or animals that could serve the people in a very specific region of the world, like in Taiwan or in Central or South America. The issue about the fish, those are issues that really do need to be addressed, and I don't think we have to shirk our responsibilities of making sure that the environment's safe. But they also are the kind of discussions you have of what if, what if, what if, where in this case, I think I'm not aware that those fish you're referring to are being commercially produced in the wild, where that is actually a cause for concern. I think it is a cause concern when genetically modified animals are put into a new environment. But I also want to make sure it's clear that those are the same concerns that we should have when we take and put beef cattle in the northern plains of the United States when we have bison.
Mm-hmm.
And the same concerns when we have deer that invade the populations where the elk were and bring in new diseases. So we have to be very concerned of the ecology, but it's not limited, and I don't think it's linked to genetic engineering. Those are principles of sound biology and sound ecology.
Yeah, just because nature does something doesn't mean it doesn't have harmful consequences.
Exactly.
Let's go back to the phones. Carrie is standing by in Minneapolis. Carrie, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I just had a question. How do you feel about the police intervention on the conference, and do you feel that their intervention is necessary and also ethical in terms of the protesters that are planning on protesting the convention?
Good question.
Good
I have
question.
That on my list, too.
That's it's been on all of our lists, I think. I think, in fact, I just came from an executive committee meeting of the society, and as you can imagine, we did have some discussion about security and the demonstrations. And I think we all agreed that we want to have there should be an opportunity for people to demonstrate and to share their views and values. And I think we've also made it a point at the meeting here. To make sure that people who have the press and the media have total access, you know, in terms of coming here and being able to meet with people and hear what's being said. We have nothing to hide, and we want to make sure, and actually, as I said earlier, is that we want to showcase what's being done and how it's being used to serve people and society. The other part about security, and I think that's an unfortunate situation that, you know, the threats of violence affect all of us. And I think the police would be irresponsible if they didn't try to put in place a situation where they could deal with the violence. And my interactions with the police have been, I think they've done an outstanding job, and I would like to give my regards and to both the Hyatt Hotel. I think they've been wonderful, as well as the Minneapolis and St. Paul police and the state police. And they have had one concern that has always been shared with me, and that is to have a secure place for people to be able to have our conference. And I think the threats of violence that have been forwarded, you know, make people have to put in place, you know, security issues that'll make sure it is safe. So the threat of violence and bomb scares and issues like that are not to be taken lightly. And I think whenever we have the security issues, it's always like, well, why is this happening? My personal freedoms. But at the same time, when there's a problem, everyone goes, well, why weren't we prepared? I think the police have done an outstanding job, and I've been down here since yesterday, and I think you'll see if you're down here at the conference center that it's pretty much business as usual. People are walking up and down the streets, you know, and I think they've done a tremendous job.
Okay, right back to the phones. Gene from Columbia Heights.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello. Yes, I guess the genes have it.
Yes.
My view is that anything science does to feed the growing human population is simply applying Band-Aids to mortal wounds. The year I was born, 1928, human population is 2 billion, now it's 6 billion. So my question is, are there genetic studies aimed at controlling or thinking about human population growth, maybe making sex less enjoyable if it results in pregnancy or other things? So I'll hang up. Thank you.
Thank you, Gene.
Well, I'm not aware of that. and certainly if we want to delve into ethical issues here, I think that would be one that beat. Take up another hour of the show, I think.
Right.
But I think he did bring up an incredible point, is that it's not only 6 million today, but it'll be 12 million within 50 years. And I think that's one of the points that, you know, we all are responsible for finding solutions to how do we feed a growing population of people. And certainly the work that will be discussed here at our conference is one of many ways of dealing with of feeding the world.
Larry Shook is the director of the Food Animal Biotechnology Center at the University of Minnesota. He helped organize the conference of the International Society of Animal Genetics, which gets underway today in downtown Minneapolis. And we're talking about issues around animal genetics. There certainly has been a lot of attention paid to this conference, especially in terms of the number of protesters it might bring out. But we wanted to talk to Professor Shook and get his point of view about what's actually happening at the conference as it goes from now through Wednesday. Tammy is on the line from Minneapolis. Tammy?
Hi. I wanted to say that I agree with you, Larry, what you said earlier, that it is good that people are allowed to protest today and to be there to do that. But I think that there's a lot of fear going on in the public and maybe some miseducation. I received a flyer about it, and one of the things that they were concerned about was some of the gene splicing going on with animals in labs, and at one point genes were spliced with genes of those of a mouse, and the AIDS virus was all of a sudden contagiable by air. And then I heard something yesterday about gene splicing, and someone whose brother had, and I think the key word here is had, diabetes, and through gene splicing with the genes of his brother, he was able to no longer have diabetes. And so I think that it would be very good if there were further education to the public, and perhaps if maybe some of the public were allowed to sit in on some of these meetings and to get a fuller understanding of what's going on.
Sure. And I think everyone's in agreement with those comments, Tammy. In fact, I know here at the university, Dr. Ashley Haas in the medical school is the new director of the Biomedical Genomics Center. And I know that he's worked with the law school and I know in sociology, so that there isn't, and there was a caller earlier about what are we doing about ethics. I know that the new center has a very strong program with, and Dr. Khan and the Center for Bioethics. And those are the kind of discussions I know are ongoing and will continue to grow in scope here at the university.
As far as you're concerned, do you think there's a lot of misinformation out there about the whole science of genetics?
Oh, certainly. I mean, I hear these things, I read these things, and then And I think I'm pretty much aware of what's going on from the scientific journals, and I go, now where did this come from? And we're certainly, and in that earlier comment about splicing genes with the AIDS where it's being expressed, I'm not so sure that, I was head of the recombinant DNA committee at the University of Illinois for 6 years, and I'm not so sure that that study would be approved. So you hear these things, and they're built on what ifs, and you could, can you do this? So if you can do this, it becomes that they did do this. And I think there's a lot of myth out there, and there's a lot of just misinformation that's intentionally used to incite fear in the lay public about what's going on.
On the other hand, I read an article that said 70% of the food on supermarket shelves contains at least some sort of genetically modified product in it. Should we be concerned about this? This is not the same food our parents and grandparents ate.
Well, I'm not so sure of that fact, but it doesn't matter. I mean, the point is that it's obviously crawling into our lives faster than we were aware of. And I think your point is what does it mean? The issue here is that I also can tell you that if you talk about your grandparents, the products that are on the shelf and the price that we're paying, and I think the safety of the food is much greater than our grandparents shared. And I think there's two issues that have been confused, and one is that clearly safety is number one on everyone's list. Now, I think an earlier point came up is that, and I think Chris mentioned that earlier, was choice. And I'm of the opinion that if that's happening and there is genetically modified, that it is appropriate to let me know that so I can make a choice. I personally believe it's healthier. I mean, the foods are healthier overall. I don't see a health challenge by genetically modified crops that have been used. And then particularly with animals, I think it's actually the opposite. What we're trying to do is identify animals that have increased disease resistance and increased growth performance, that we don't have to use antibiotics, and so that we don't have to use hormones and growth promotants. And so in reality, in terms of what work that's being discussed here at this conference, we'll have animals that are actually going to be, if you will, more organic and less genetically manipulated through antibiotics and growth promotants than they are today.
You know, we had a guest on our mid-morning program earlier today who said that some of the animals who are the products of this sort of research and these experiments suffer terribly, that they're the chickens that are being produced to grow faster and have more meat on the breast end up with bone deformities and horrible things like that and live pretty miserable lives. Would you agree with that, or is there some truth to that?
Well, I wouldn't agree with it because I look at producers and I go around the state and look at farmers, and if animals are suffering and they're miserable and they're having all these things, farmers are losing money. I mean, no producer out there wants animals that are suffering because they're just not growing, they're not laying eggs, they're not producing milk. So, I mean, that whole premise is based on the fact that people are out there intentionally making animals miserable. When I just don't believe it. In fact, if anything, I think what you've seen, and particularly, again, here at the university, a lot of research has been done into understanding how we can build better farms to alleviate suffering and actually make it more environmentally friendly, if you will, for our animals so that they actually will grow better. I think people have realized that. So I just think the whole premise of that argument is false.
Back to the telephones. Dorothy is on the line from White Bear.
Yes, I'm very concerned about all the tinkering with nature before we've even begun to understand its functionality. And we can destroy it, and we can disable the ability of our planet and atmosphere to sustain life on Earth, but we need to just pull back and think about the insane productivity of harmful things. They try to pin cancer all on smoking, all the insecticides and herbicides and spermicides and all the brilliant things that have been mass-produced, what goes in comes out, and it affects every microorganism, and we've just got to get our heads straight again. Things don't taste as good as they used to either. I grew up on a farm before so much processing and and virtual flavors and odors and things to fool the senses began to addle the brains even of scientists. Basic science used to be about understanding and respecting nature. We've just got to get off this product orientation. We don't have to feed the whole world. The whole world has survived for its our whole species' survival long before some of our arrogant improvements began to ruin it.
Okay, thanks for the call, Dorothy. Professor Shook, how do you respond to a comment like that?
Well, I think that Dorothy made a good point at the end there where she said that we, understanding basic science, and I think that's, and I want to separate that from, we may all not agree with, how that's applied for different products or different kind of processed foods, and certainly I think we all agree that our grandmother's cakes and pies were better probably than we buy in the store today. But the point here is that this conference is about understanding those basic processes that Dorothy alluded to. But we're also getting back to a point she made was about the use of herbicides and pesticides. And in my opinion, those are the issues that are really confronting us. How do we use genetic information to allow us to not have to use those kinds of pesticides and herbicides that may have a negative effect of our environment and on our health?
We are running short on time, but let's see if we can squeeze in one more caller, Colleen from Minneapolis. Colleen, you still with us?
Colleen. I've been waiting.
Okay.
Yes, hi. Thanks for having this issue on the radio and spending so much time on it. I guess I had one question. I'll make one comment. I'm opposed to genetic engineering. I think that we're opening up a Pandora's box that we will never be able to shut. But that's not my reason for calling. I heard your caller comment about how comfortable we as citizens should be about the animal usage because they have such great protocols in line. And I have to wonder about that because, as far as I know, the University of Minnesota has an animal use committee. It's extremely hard to get on. It's extremely hard to get any information out of them. As far as I know, I think they had to be sued to get information out of them. And then lastly, in the information that was finally received from them, it showed that there was never an animal experiment that had ever been denied. And
right.
Can you comment on that?
We talked a little bit about that earlier. We have about 30 seconds.
Sure. Well, as I said before, I think this focusing on the thing that nothing has been denied, I think that I've had protocols that have gone through there, and they've been reviewed, and they have not been the first time I've submitted have been approved, and they've worked with me to come up with different approaches to secure a better regimen of the study I wanted to do with the idea of making sure that it's done properly and appropriately with the animal's perspective in mind. So I think they do a tremendous job, and I think
we have to end it there, Professor
okay.
Shook. Thanks so
Thank
much
you.
For being with us. That is Professor Larry Shook of the University of Minnesota, one of the organizers of the Conference on Animal Genetics. I want to thank Professor Shook and everybody who called in. That's midday for today. I'm Mike Mulcahy. If you missed part of our program, check out our website, minnesotapublicradio.org, and, of course, stay tuned for continuing coverage of the conference in Minneapolis this weekend and into next week. On tonight's Word of Life, the Ordway's Kevin McCollum, who knows a little about musical theater, having produced the original production of Rent, goes looking for the Midwestern musical blockbuster. Carrie Pickett documents the Radical Fairies, and we'll have the roundup tonight at 6. You're listening to Minnesota Public Radio. It's 72 degrees at KNOW FM 91.1, Minneapolis, St. Paul. High should be around 72, 73 this afternoon. Partly sunny skies, northwest winds. Tonight, partly cloudy, low in the lower 50s. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, high in the mid-70s.
From National Public Radio in New York, this is Talk of the Nation, Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Shortly after the turn of the last century, doctors looking to treat dead